Today is March 29th, 2017, and this is episode number 404 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, Managing Editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, and I am proud to announce that the U.S. Post Office just awarded me Frequent Flyer Gold Platinum Status Superstar. Status thing. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM, and we can let you comment on or question anything about the show at acm@macobserver.com. Hey, listen, we've only done 403 of these episodes already.
Right. And this is the episode no one will find.
Right. Episode 404.
But as far as the award you got, I'm assuming they gave you like a participation trophy that you can put on your shelf, mailed it to you.
No, they did not.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Right. So, in the meanwhile, speaking of sucking balls, Congress, listen, I'm fired up today, man.
You fired up last week also.
I was fired. I'm going to blame John Key at least a little bit.
That seems reasonable. At some point though, when do you come to the realization that this is just simply who you are?
Yes, it was the inner me all along. It's true. Anyway, I'm all fired up. Speaking of Congress, the House of Representatives yesterday voted on a party line vote. It was 215 to 205, mostly party line. There were some defections, I think, from the GOP side. Mm-hmm. Screw us. That's what they voted. The Senate voted last week to screw us.
Right. And then the House is like, hey, we want to play too.
Yes. And the screwing us in this particular instance is stripping away an FCC rule, which Congress can do, that was put in place under Tom Wheeler in the Obama administration, that kept ISPs from selling our information, our browser history, all the data that they accumulate on us without our permission. Because they actually had to obtain that permission. It wasn't an opt-out. It was actually an opt-in rule. So you could agree to let Comcast sell all your browser history. And this wouldn't have gone into effect until later this year, to be honest, to be fair. Mm-hmm. I think it was December it was supposed to go into effect. So this the bill that was voted on by the Senate and the House keeps that rule. The rule was in place, but the effects of the rule weren't in place yet. And this rule, this bill strips away that rule and makes it illegal for the FCC to pass similar rules in the future.
So basically what Congress has just done is to create a scenario wherein I pay good money every month to an internet service provider, and then that service provider can take what I'm paying for without my consent and sell it to other people.
Yes. They can sell anything they want to anyone they want. So not even just advertisers.
And they don't even have to tell me what they're doing with my stuff.
No. They can do this without your approval, without your permission, and without you profiting or benefiting in any way from the transaction. All this does is make it possible for the large corporate ISPs to become more profitable, for them to make a little more freaking money. And the rationalization, I'm sorry, you were going to say something?
No, go ahead with your rationalization.
The rationalization, these
lawmakers?
Corporations
okay.
offered was that Google gets to do this and Facebook gets to do this. So we're at a disadvantage because we can't do this. This is unfair.
Is that like a false equivalency happening right there?
Yes, it is. Because here's the deal. You can, first of all, decide not to use Google. Good luck with that. But you can.
Mm-hmm.
You could decide not to use Facebook. Right? You can decide mm-hmm. to use any given service that you want on the internet, but you got to be able to get on the internet to use the internet. And the internet has clearly become an indispensable part of modern life.
True. And in most markets, at least in the United States, people don't have a choice. It's
not
like,
have a choice.
Yeah, that whatever internet service provider is in the area, that's what they have to go with.
Right. And in some markets, actually many markets, that's actually a government bestowed monopoly. Right. There are a lot of markets at the city level in particular where they award a cable provider the cable TV franchise. Mm-hmm. It's a franchise. So I say it's a monopoly. It's a franchise, but it's a bestowed franchise. And the same thing is true with broadband, because and that's related to the idea that the companies didn't want to invest in laying cable if they weren't going to be able to monopolize the local market. Now, one can argue about the benefits of that one way or another, but the reality is that a lot of customers, a lot of people in the United States of America don't have any competition when it comes to broadband. And even if they did, it would be competition between one or two corporate giants who are all playing by the same rules. There's nowhere near enough competition for the idea of protecting your privacy to become a selling point.
No, that's a really good point. It's if the only thing you can get is the one service provider, they don't need to offer any incentives to woo you away from a competitor, because there are none.
Correct. There are none. And this I said it was along a mostly party line vote. It was 215 to 205, which actually means some people didn't vote. I know there was at least one person that voted present. But this was the Republican Party that passed this, because they are far more interested in boosting corporate profits than they are in protecting consumer privacy. And it is just so ass backwards, and it infuriates me.
So now I want to see how long it takes for some organization to raise the funds to go and buy browser histories and start getting browser histories from specific people like members of Congress.
Oh, that would be lovely. That would be lovely. I would not put it past these folks to actually pass an exemption where, you know, for themselves, but whatever.
Of course.
So here we had a fellow. My rant was political in nature, because this is one of those situations where politics intersects technology.
That's happening a lot lately.
It's gonna keep happening, and it's gonna happen more and more and more, because technology is a bigger and bigger and bigger part of life. And this thing was pure politics. You've got the party of corporate profits versus the other party. And the other party voted against this, and the party of corporate profits voted for it. And there was the vast majority of people who have commented so far on my rant haven't taken on the politics of it. They've actually just talked about the ramifications of the actual law and limiting the law, etc. Mm-hmm. One fellow though said, and I quote, "Another great day for freedom. I am so sick and tired of the new pop-ups everywhere asking if I want to get a lawyer to decide if I should accept a cookie from CNN. The liberal progressive nanny state agenda lost the election. Get over it." He adds, "I choose, let's see, if your nanny state wants to pass a law to limit the, I don't even know what he's saying there. Justice is blind before the law. Apple Corporation is equal to a little old lady as soon to be." Anyway, all right. So there's so much that is just factually and philosophically wrong with that. For one thing, another great day for freedom. This was Gern Blanston 23. I have no idea if this is his real name. I don't care.
How is that? a great day for freedom.
It's a freedom for corporations. But see, that's the thing. That's the thing here. This is this particular law benefits corporations at our expense. We aren't more free from this. This notion, this delusional thing that the right seems to be embracing about this notion that what's happening is somehow making us more free with the entire Trump administration is just baffling to me. I mean, the corporations are have people at a massive disadvantage. Capital has people at a massive disadvantage. Mm-hmm. And we are not made more free by this. The Comcast and Time Warner and Google Fiber, those companies and then the other broadband providers that are out there, Cox and I don't know. There's a few others out there, but those are the companies that are made more free by this. And this is a zero sum game. This is a zero sum game. Their freedom can only be gained at our expense. So that's factually wrong. That is just it's a factually wrong statement. My next thing: the liberal progressive nanny state agenda lost the election. Yes, we actually did lose the election, but there's still more of us than there are of you. There are more of us than there are of you. Winning the election does not mean that there are more of you in this particular case. So that's to me, that's something that the right needs to be reminded of frequently and loudly. Secondly, he said, justice is blind before the law. Apple Corporation is equal to a little old lady. That may be that theoretically true, mm-hmm. but in practice, Apple is going to take 100 lawyers and infinite hours of research.
And all the money.
And all with all the money in front of. And of course, you know, in this particular case, Apple is not the company here, but anyway, he invoked Apple. So any large corporation is going to be able to take infinitely more lawyers than the little old lady, unless the little old lady happens to be a billionaire.
Right.
Right. So that is not equal. It's theoretically equal, but in practice, it is not equal. And that is the thing. Government should be, in my opinion, protecting the weak from the strong in this country. It's one of the things this country was predicated on.
But instead, it feels like the government is empowering corporations at our expense.
Yes.
So now, what do we do about our privacy online? Because the way I'm interpreting this, the vote in the House and the Senate essentially means I no longer have any privacy online.
Well, and you know, we really didn't have any privacy online. I mean, there's just so much of this that just puts me on megatilt. For one thing, one of the biggest things here is the fact that included in the law is a provision prohibiting the FCC from ever addressing this in the future. And that means that not only would some kind of liberal commie pansy have to, you know, assert power in the FCC and become chairman of the FCC mm-hmm. for this to change, but liberal pansies would have to also take over the Congress and the White House for this to change.
Right.
Right. Because it's going to take
this law.
Right. And this kind of law at this point in our history can only be passed for or against by parties that own, if one party or the other owns both the Congress and the White House. So, I mean, it's just, well, you know, talk about small government, right? I mean, oh, good Lord. Oh, this is just, man, it's just so infuriating. This law is so offensive. the ISPs are so offensive. The surveillance capitalism is so offensive. I'm so sick of surveillance capitalism, man. I'm sick of surveillance capitalism. I'm sick of it.
So how long before a rights group files a lawsuit against the government for the, well, of course, we have to get to the point where it's signed by the president as
well. Yeah, and Trump is expected to sign this. And this is absolutely within the purview of the Congress to pass this law. The Republicans have the constitutional right to do this. Mm-hmm. Right. So lawsuits aren't going to change anything. This is going to be the law of the land, and it's going to be, you know, it's going to take some company rising to provide some kind of broadband service or some kind of leapfrogging technology where they're committed to privacy to change this. Only the marketplace is going to change this right now.
My guess is that VPNs are going to suddenly become a lot more popular with the average person.
Oh yeah, I'm seriously considering a VPN out of principle. But so what I'm wondering is if the problem is that a VPN can be monitoring and selling our data too. True. So with a VPN, you're connecting via an encrypted connection between a tunnel between, you know, you to a remote server, and your traffic is essentially being hidden from your ISP. Right? Well, and that's great. That's great. But what is the VPN doing with your data? Because they could be doing the same thing. And a lot of VPNs are based not in the United States. So that means that they can they're subject to even less regulatory scrutiny than we are.
And this is
that utterly depends, because Europe takes consumer protection so much more seriously than the United States does.
That's true. But this is why I think that we're going to see an upswing in people that are very tech savvy building their own VPNs.
Well, doing that, and then maybe also like the rise of an auditing service that audits what VPNs are doing with data.
Oh, I like that.
Some kind of third party, you know, and like it would be something that I mean, this would have to be paid for. So I guess it would mean the VPNs would have to subscribe to it to get a rating. Like, you know, we're rated by the. My VPN isn't going to screw me in the trade group. You know, get a 5-star rating from them or something. Because right now a VPN can claim all at once that it's protecting your privacy.
That's true. And at some point you just have to trust that they're doing what they say.
Right. Currently. Mm-hmm. Currently. And, I know today it's funny. Our deals are usually put together for us by the folks at Stack Commerce. Sometimes I pick them out myself, but, Stack Commerce usually, puts together the deals that they're wanting to, promote on our store, mm-hmm. A week in advance. And today's deal was oh my goodness, what's the actual name? Private Internet Access VPN. So it's a VPN that actually trades on the notion that they're protecting your privacy. Mm-hmm. But again, the reality is that there aren't any real ways to know exactly what a VPN is doing. But the FBI has complained about these guys, but not getting any useful data out of them after they subpoenaed them.
All right. That's a pretty good endorsement right there.
It's pretty good. That's it's an endorsement by proxy, sort of. Mm-hmm. Negative. I don't know, whatever. That's a good start, but I mean, we need more. We need some kind of third party auditing service that we can trust, or we need a company that is making privacy a competitive point. to start an ISP.
Ah, okay.
Gee, I wonder if there's a company that could possibly do that.
You know, I know there's at least one company out there that says they take our privacy and our security very seriously, and that would be Apple.
Dude, I just had, you know what? So listen, I was going to write a piece. I know that you know this, of course, but to our listeners, I was going to write a piece today begging Apple to launch an ISP. Once upon a time, do you remember there were rumors years and years ago?
Yeah, I do remember.
About Apple doing an ISP. And there have been, of course, rumors about Apple doing a mobile network, a carrier service.
Mm-hmm. MVNO.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, an MVNO, right? And those rumors, I mean, like, I would imagine there was some fire behind that smoke that Apple was working on those things. But, like a lot of different products that Apple works on, it got canned along the way. Mm-hmm. But instead of doing an ISP or a VPN, excuse me, or an MVNO. Mm-hmm. Thank you, MVNO. What if Apple gave us a VPN?
That would be cool.
Like that would be better.
Like, here, this is just another perk of your iCloud subscription.
Built right into the hardware and the software.
That would be great, because right now, using a VPN involves you needing to flip some virtual switches after to install extra software.
And it's gotten easier to set up VPNs, for sure.
Mm-hmm. But you have to remember to use the VPN also.
Yeah, but if Apple was building it in to iCloud, oh my God, that would be so fantastic. That's what that's the piece I'm going to write today.
I'm looking forward to reading it. I would love that. Apple give us a serious VPN just built right in, and it's easy to use, and it's just automatically set up because it's part of your iCloud subscription.
Yeah, we'd still have to trust Apple. That Apple was actually doing what it was saying. All right, so let me rephrase this. I want Apple to provide a VPN where they also say, and by the way, we're encrypting all your data, and we don't know what you're doing. All right,
I want this.
We'd have to trust Apple to do that. But the thing is, Apple has a track record of doing just that, and Apple has a business model that is not predicated on surveillance capitalism.
That's true. Apple doesn't want to know our stuff.
Apple does not want to know our stuff to a fault, right? You know, that's the kind of comes back to that old thing where like, you know, Tim Cook says that I think it was the news app doesn't need to know what music you're listening to. And I beg to differ. News app precisely needs to know what music I'm listening to. So it can offer me news about the bands that I like the most.
Okay, so I love the idea of Apple creating a VPN and setting it up so that they have no way of eavesdropping.
Yes.
And they're not going to do that.
They could.
They're not going to do it.
Why not?
Because once you create a service like that where they cannot look at it at all,
uh-huh.
Now you're going to have the government flipping out because Apple has just created the perfect system for criminals and terrorists to be able to communicate without anyone eavesdropping.
But Apple's, I mean, first of all, other VPNs can do this, and criminals and terrorists are probably using them.
Are these VPNs where there's literally no way for the company to get into any of the data?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know enough about
My guess is the answer is that they can, on some level, get into the data. And my feeling is...
Okay, all right. I'm actually okay with Apple being... If Apple could encrypt our data so that our ISPs can't see it, but could still respond to a warrant, I'm totally okay with that. Even when it comes to our encrypted communications, if there was a way to have encrypted communications that was protected from the bad guys, but Apple could still actually answer a lawful warrant, I would want that.
That would be quite a feat to pull off. And right. I would love to see Apple do that.
We can't have that. But we can't have that. But Apple could encrypt our data between it and the VPN, or through a VPN, right? Mm-hmm. Apple could encrypt data from us to their servers, and still see that data and be able to respond to lawful warrants. That could happen, and I would be fine with that. I'm not wanting to be totally hidden from the law. I'm wanting to be hidden from the bad guys.
Now, this would not override the encryption that's being used in other apps, say like the Messages app. So you'd be sending an encrypted data packet through Messages through an encrypted channel. And if Apple could decrypt that VPN channel, all they would have is an encrypted piece of data that they can't get into.
Right. Right. Yeah, you're right. I mean, Apple is already encrypting so much of what we're doing on our iOS devices and through Apple services, I should say. Mm-hmm. But what we're talking about is a VPN that would protect what we're doing from our ISPs, essentially.
I could totally go for that.
I would love that. Now, of course, one reason why a lot of people use VPNs is, first of all, there are plenty of legitimate reasons to use a VPN, including, for instance, tunneling into your corporate network.
Mm-hmm. Or if you're going to do banking while you're at Starbucks.
There are all kinds of, legitimate as all get out reasons to use a VPN. And now another reason why people might use a VPN is because they want to be able to access content that is blocked in their country. Mm-hmm. So for instance, you want to be able to, let's go with the legitimate aspect. So let's say a fellow moves to Australia.
Okay.
And he but he's from the U.S. and so all of his movies and Netflix, right? Those services are not available. The things that he's already paid for aren't necessarily available in Australia, mm-hmm. right? So with a VPN, you could tunnel through to a server that's in the United States and be able to watch your Netflix, be able to get your iTunes downloads, be able to buy from the U.S. store, that sort of thing, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't think you need a VPN to do that. You need an account, which is
You need an account with a credit card for that country.
So my iTunes example is not right, but my Netflix example is. Netflix is not available in Australia,
right? And of course, now Netflix will say, but if you're not in the United States, now you're violating the terms of service, and you can't use this anyhow, even with a VPN. And
but they wouldn't know. That's what a VPN's for.
Yeah, but it's popular VPN services. Companies like Netflix, they watch for that. But I totally get where you're going with this. You have paid for a service, and you should have the right to use it. Like, let's say you went on vacation to Australia for a month, and you wanted to watch the new season of Daredevil because, you know, it's Daredevil, and you want to watch it while you're there. Okay, so you VPN so you can watch something while you're temporarily in Australia.
Right.
This seems like a totally reasonable thing to do.
Or let's say you live behind an authoritarian state like China, mm-hmm. and everything on the planet's blocked, or in Iran, where Iran has its own little mini Great Wall. Right. And yep. And so a lot of content is blocked. You could use VPN to tunnel through to a server in another country and be able to actually access, something like Google or another search engine without having everything blocked by the Chinese government.
You know, you just brought up another thing, which is a problem with the changes that this law makes. And it's that your ISP, because they're monitoring everything you're doing and they can sell all your activity, they can now start injecting their own content into your search results and into web pages that you're viewing.
Yeah, they could. I don't know if this law directly addresses that. The lack of net neutrality addresses that. And that's going to become the law of the land, too, thanks to these corporate
if you
bastards
put these two together, I mean, this is just a perfect recipe for just having.
It's true.
Yeah, it's a disaster.
Now, there's just to address the elephant in the room. There are nefarious reasons one could use a VPN. One could be trying to access illegal content. Of course, China would say that accessing unfiltered search results is illegal content. But here in the United States, say someone wanted to access porn that is illegal.
Mm-hmm.
Or other kinds. There is even in the United States, there's plenty of content that is illegal. One could tunnel through to a VPN where to a country that's where you can access that sort of thing, and or maybe just because you actually want to. You want to try to hide your tracks. There are plenty of nefarious reasons to use a VPN too, but there's lots of legitimate reasons to use a VPN. And it would be fantastic if Apple were to offer us a VPN.
Fantastic. I would totally go for that.
I'd pay for it.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I would pay for it also. So the problem I have with a lot of VPNs is that I don't have any way of verifying that they really are protecting me the way they say, which is not to say that I think there's a bunch of bad VPNs out there. It's just there's so many, and none stand out as the VPN to use, service to use.
Yeah, it's true. Now, I mean, so if you're interested in a VPN, by the way, we do have a lot of deals at deals.macobserver.com. The one we're doing today, Private Internet Access VPN, which that's the name of the company. Mm-hmm. That's just one. We have several other VPNs that have deals that you can get through us. Some of them are, by the way, I don't like lifetime subscriptions to services.
Mm-hmm.
They're Ponzi schemes.
Yeah. The assumption. Right? Yeah. No, I get where you're going with this. Yep.
And as a matter of fact, our friends at Stack Commerce have stopped doing lifetime subscriptions because I was raising such stink about it, at least through our site. I think actually there are occasionally I still see one, but we never promote them in our headlines because I don't like them. I don't like lifetime subscriptions. Mm-hmm. Now, a lifetime license to software is one thing, but a lifetime subscription to a service requires that future services be paid for by somebody else, hence the Ponzi scheme.
Right. And lifetime license to software, that's not lifetime. That's called a perpetual license.
Some Mac developers have been doing with through Stack Commerce,
mm-hmm.
in our deal site is they're actually giving you access to future updates to the software as well.
Okay,
and they're calling that a lifetime license.
All right. Well, that good for them. That's awesome.
Well, because a perpetual license would mean
a perpetual license, but it can also mean
like I've buy version 6. Okay. All right. Fair enough.
I do have some perpetual license software where the developer has never charged for an update, even major updates.
Mostly pedantic.
Yeah. Well, nonetheless, the real point here is that VPNs. We have
VPNs. There are several of them at deals.macobserver.com with several different VPNs. And the problem is that I haven't tested them yet. I haven't really been concerned about a VPN service enough to start doing testing myself. I know that Dave and John F. Braun on Geek Gab, the Mac Geek Gab recently. They looked at some different VPN services. There's probably a lot more testing to go in our future.
I believe that's true.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but if you're looking for a deal on one, go get it through us.
I think that sounds like a great plan.
Yeah. And obviously because it's going through deals.macobserver.com, right? We get, some kind of consideration for purchases that go through that deal site, so it helps us too.
Right, so you get a deal. Make sure shows like this stay on the air for you. Or the other shows that we have that you might like.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. All right. My Apple Watch is finished updating.
Oh, great.
Nope. Actually, my iPhone lied because my phone.
So, Brian, there's this interesting thing with the Apple Watch updates where your iPhone says, okay, the update's done. But then the next time you put your watch on and do the passcode, then it actually finishes the update, which takes a while.
Oh, that's pretty cool. In this particular case, I'm actually still on the update ticker thingy on my watch, even though the phone said it was done.
Yeah, that's normal.
So I've still got that step to go to. Anyway, VPNs. I would love for Apple to offer one. I am sick to death of the corporate handouts that are currently being given to corporations in the United States by the Republicans in power, and it is gross and disgusting to me, and I am sick of it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I just have this really bad taste in my mouth because of laws like this. I mean, this is not taking care of the population. This is not taking care of voters. This is taking care of corporations and big business
donors at the expense of us. All right. So, but let's be fair. The fellow Gern Blanston, I'm guessing that's not his real name, but Gern Blanston 23, who prattled on about
freedom. So the interesting thing for me is that there's 22 other Gern Blanstons.
That always baffles me when I see. Yeah, I don't put numbers on the end of my name. I look for a different name. If you know when I'm registering somewhere, it says you can't have. You can't have this or that name, and it says, you know, do you want to try this or that name, 22 or 23? No, I don't. I'll try something else. Anyway, Gern believes. I mean, you know, he doesn't like the nanny state. He actually sees this as freedom. So, assuming any conservative listeners who are excited about this law are still listening to this show. Which I kind of have my doubts. Yeah. But assuming that's the case, I'd love to hear from you. I am always interested in engaging and learning how people who think differently than me think.
I enjoy different views.
Yeah, if you think differently on this and you actually think this is a good law and that I'm just missing something crucial and obvious, lay it on me. I'd like to hear it. You can write us at acm@macobserver.com. You can write us on Twitter @contextmachine. I truly want to hear from you. It baffles me. I mean, I had a snarky section in my rant. It says it doesn't take a genius. It doesn't take a genius to work through the logic flaws in the ISP argument that they're at a disadvantage to Google and Facebook. Mm-hmm. And yet 215 people still voted for it. Now, I am guessing that the vast majority of those 215 people are not idiots. They're probably smarter than not. You know, they're smart enough to get elected, which, you know, depending on your view of politics today, you may or may not think is an endorsement, but they're probably not stupid people, yet they all voted for this. And not all of them got money from Comcast. And as a matter of fact, Comcast probably gave some money to some of the people who voted against it.
Very likely.
Comcast, like many corporations, gives money to both sides of the aisle. Right? I mean, you know, that's lobbying in the modern world. And yet, so I mean, I would imagine that most of the people casting this vote did so because they believed that it was the right thing to do. Right? Because very few people are actually evil.
Yeah, that's true.
But I don't understand it. I don't understand. Are you one of those? Are you one of those folks? Do you see the goodness of this law? Do you feel like I don't know, the free market's going to take care of this, and that we shouldn't be trying to control it through the nanny state, and the you know, corporations are people too, and they should be able to do whatever they want. Gern Blanston believes that we're all equal in front of the law, which I would say that we have empirical evidence that that's not the case. So I don't know. So I'd like to hear it. I'd like to hear it. Make me understand why you think this is a good idea.
I have to go back to Gern Blanston for a second.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious, listeners, do you think that our Gern Blanston commenter is a Steve Martin fan, or are they grabbing the name from somewhere else? Do you remember that?
Mm-mm.
Saturday Night Live, back when Saturday Night Live was awesome. Steve Martin did a routine.
Saturday Night Live is still awesome, but go ahead.
Well, I love you even though you're wrong, but they do have some awesome bits now, which they didn't for a long time. But anyhow, Steve Martin did a thing long ago. So this is back when he was doing early stand-up. And was a guest on SNL, and he told everyone that he had to change his name to Steve Martin so he'd have a stage name, because he didn't feel like he'd be successful using his given name, which is Gern Blanston.
Oh, yeah, assuredly.
But it's,
assuredly,
it's yeah. a name that's been...
There's no chance.
Yeah.
There's no chance that this fellow doesn't know where that came from.
Well, it's possible that he picked it up, or she picked it up from other references, because there have been hat tips to Gern Blanston in other genres over the years. Anyhow.
Yeah, all right. Well, we may never know, and yet it probably doesn't matter.
And yet it will keep me up at night.
Yes. #Jeff.
Yeah.
Right. All right. So that's that spewy bit. So let's go on to another spewy bit, and Samsung sucks balls.
Oh, I shouldn't laugh, because I'm going to encourage you.
Right. So Samsung has been showing off the Samsung Galaxy 8.
Mm-hmm.
And it's buttonless, it's edgeless, fingerprint sensor on the back. Didn't you write up something this morning about Apple supposedly, like someone saying that Apple's going to put Touch ID on the back?
Yeah, there's this very flimsy report that came out with no real information to back it up, saying that that supply sources inside Foxconn are saying that Apple is taking the home button off the iPhone 8, which is something we've been hearing as rumors anyhow, but that instead of embedding Touch ID into the display itself, they're going to put a Touch ID button on the back of the phone.
Yeah, not happening.
No, I am so not buying into that.
Not even a little bit of a chance. I would say that if Apple found that it could not do fingerprints through the display itself, that it would instead keep the home button.
I'm with you, and that's what I say in my piece.
Because putting the touch ID sensor on the back is, it is to me a catastrophically bad idea, and Apple would have to do something that I cannot imagine for me to change my mind on that. Now, I have to point out that Apple has often done things that we thought that other companies did, and it didn't make any sense, and then Apple did it, and it did make sense.
Mm-hmm.
So it is possible that Apple could find a way to put Touch ID on the back and have it make sense, but I'm not buying it, not even a little bit.
I'm not buying it either. I'm having a hard time visualizing Apple saying, you know, we've been touting the iPhone as the device that comes with 10 styluses, unless you've lost a finger or thumb. And then saying, but we expect people to only use one of their fingers. And that, and so that's now your Touch ID finger, which is basically what you're doing if you're, if you put the Touch ID on the back.
That's true. Well, yeah, yeah, that's true. Yeah, because there's really there's likely only to be one finger that, that actually makes sense.
Right. So
to use it on the back.
Yeah. So it's an index finger sensor at that point, because you're not going to be able to reasonably hold your phone and use another finger to touch the sensor on the back. And if they do,
yeah, I'm not buying that.
I'm just not buying it.
But Samsung did. And wait, hold on. All right, so Sam's the Galaxy S8 has got the fingerprint sensor on the back. Mm-hmm. But better yet, it's right next to the camera.
So every picture you take with your Galaxy S8 is going to be all blurry because it's going to have fingerprint goop.
Yeah, it's going to be glamorous.
Yeah. Oh my God, it's the Glamour Shop phone.
It's the Glamour Shop phone. I mean, that is so idiotic. That is such bad design. So if I will go out on a limb and say that if Apple proves me wrong and puts Touch ID on the back of the next iPhone, that it won't be next to the camera.
Now, as I'm thinking about this, Samsung may be onto something, because that camera is a great tactile cue as to where to find the fingerprint sensor.
Well, you could just stick a rim around it.
You're totally not rolling with my joke.
I'm not rolling with them. You're right. I'm sorry. Well, that's funny, Jeff.
I should just end the show right here.
While you technically have that power, let's finish talking about this. So anyway, all right. So Samsung is putting its fingerprint sensor on the back. Of course, it's still just a Samsung fingerprint sensor. It's not the equivalent to Touch ID, whatever.
And this is not the first Android phone with a fingerprint sensor on the back. So it's not like this is brand new thing.
It's not even the first Samsung phone with the fingerprint sensor on the back.
Right.
But the Verge did a piece, a very long piece, actually. It was some nice long form journalism where they were invited over to South Korea to check out the S8. And they started off with this with a quote from VP, I think it was VP, Samsung VP. Who cares? Whatever. Some Samsung executive. And he said, "We have a dream to overcome Apple." Mm-hmm. And first of all, LOL, you're not going to do it because you've got delusions of software relevance. Secondly, here's a difference between Apple and Samsung. Apple spends its efforts trying to make the best products possible. Samsung spends its efforts trying to beat Apple.
You know, some people would say that's not really any different, but that's a huge philosophical difference.
It is a massive philosophical difference. For one thing, Samsung is perpetually in reactionary catch-up mode to the extent that they get wind of something that Apple is going to do, and then they try to beat Apple to market. Yeah. And we saw the ultimate result. Hopefully the ultimate result. I hope that we don't have worse results at some point. But with the batteries exploding in the Galaxy, the Note 7.
Yeah.
Right. With all the exploding batteries. And that happened because Samsung was trying to steal a march on Apple. They heard that the iPhone 7 wasn't going to be all that different from iPhone 6S. And so they thought, oh my goodness, we can finally beat Apple at something, and we can have this phone and it's going to be awesome. And we've got to release it before the iPhone 7, and then everybody on the planet's going to buy one, and it's going to be awesome.
It's just going to run like wildfire through the market.
It's going to explode. Yeah. It's going to explode in popularity. Too soon.
No, not too soon.
like wildfire. It's funny too. And we saw the results of that. I mean, they're always in catch-up mode. And like, you know, if anything, Samsung should have learned the lesson that when they're going to copy Apple, they should wait to see exactly what Apple's going to do so they can copy the real thing instead of copying what they think Apple is going to do. Because Samsung has proven that it doesn't, generally speaking, have that many good ideas.
No, it's good at taking ideas other people or other companies come up with and putting them together into a product that's compelling to the average consumer.
Yes.
That's not fair. They're compelling to a lot of people, but they do seem popular with the average consumer.
But what I've said a million times before is that Samsung doesn't matter. If Samsung went away, Apple's not going to gain 50% of the market. Other Android makers are going to step up, and they're going to gain it. HTC would probably be generally speaking, I really like HTC's industrial design. For instance,
I could see HTC getting to steal a big chunk of the market if Samsung wasn't there.
Xiaomi, LG, HTC, maybe ZSE, and maybe Huawei. You know, those companies are going to find their sales exploding, and you know, Apple might possibly gain a little bit of market share in this fictional scenario where Samsung vanished. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's I mean, Samsung doesn't matter. They think that they do. They have these delusions of software relevance. You know, that's why they slap all their craptacular Me Too services on top of Android, and no one cares. No one wants it. No one's wishing that they had the Samsung interface. No one's saying, you know, Android's nice, but only if we could have a really crappy, ugly interface that sat on top of it, that gunked things up. You know, that's what we really want. No one's doing that, but that's what Samsung does.
Mm-hmm. And there are people that go for that. I remember years ago, and I'm totally doing a rabbit hole here. This is back when the Mac and Windows, the PC wars were happening. And I was talking with this person who was just adamant that I shouldn't be using a Mac, and they thought it was stupid I was using a Mac. And I said, well, why do you use Windows? You've just been complaining about how difficult it is and how you don't understand it, and yet you're saying that I shouldn't be using a Mac? And they said, yes, but that's because when you're using a computer, it should feel like you have to work at it.
Yeah, I met people that felt that way too. Yeah, the Macs were bad because they made things too easy.
Yeah. So I like to think of that as Stockholm syndrome, but I'm wondering if we might be seeing a little bit of that with people that are like, ooh, Samsung's interface, best ever.
Part of that with the Mac thing and the PC thing is that a lot of people who felt that way were people who gloried in the fact that they had mastered the complexities of DOS in particular and the early versions of Windows. Right. I mean, and let's be honest. I mean, Windows today is infinitely better than Windows of yore. Microsoft has really closed the gap a lot in usability on the Windows side. Mm-hmm. I still prefer Mac. It's not even a choice for me. But you know, so a lot of people who complained about the Mac making it too easy were people who enjoyed self-perceived status from having mastered the complexities of Windows, and they didn't want that taken away. They preferred
their pain and frustration was a badge of honor.
Exactly, and it's something that they perceived. They got self-perceived glory out of it. So, I don't know. There's a lot in that, and the rest of it is probably a little Stockholm syndrome. But and there are plenty of people who legitimately dislike iOS and Apple's entire ecosystem because they don't want to be told what to do and whatever. I'm sorry, we're totally going down a rabbit hole because I want to actually explain why I'm wrong.
All right, I'm listening.
With Bixby, Samsung may have something that is relevant.
Brian, what's Bixby?
Bixby is the artificially intelligent virtual assistant that Samsung bought that was developed by the same core team that originally developed Siri for SRI many years ago.
Okay.
So Siri got bought by Apple. Those folks went to Apple for their contractually obligated amount of time, and then they left Apple to go do it all again.
And this time they called it Bixby, and then Samsung bought it.
Samsung bought it, right. And at the time, I LOL'd because, you know, this was just another example of Samsung's delusions of software relevance. Mm-hmm. And at the core of that, by the way, is the fact that Samsung is just an Android maker. They're just an Android maker. That's all they are. They're just an Android maker who has found a little who got lucky with the idea of making a large screen device and saw their sales explode because of that. Mm-hmm. Right? They're just an Android maker. They're because they don't control the hardware and the software, they will always just be an Android maker. But with Bixby, what they say that they're trying to do, according to this this article by The Verge, we'll have that in the show notes, by the way, it's a really good read, is they're trying to make Bixby the interface for their device. They're not there yet, right? But they want you to do anything that you could do with your phone. They want you to be able to do it with voice at some point.
Right. So you would literally not have to touch the display of your phone to do anything.
That's their goal. That's what they say their goal is.
And that's an ambitious goal. And man, that would be really cool. They're also looking at this as something that goes beyond just their hardware. So other devices could have the Bixby AI.
Yeah, third party, but you know, as well as TVs and but third party products too. If Samsung can actually make, what'd you say?
Dishwashers.
Yay! If Samsung can actually do something, with Bixby in this regard, Samsung, for the first time, could possibly not be delusional in its pursuit of software relevance. Maybe. I kind of doubt it, though. Even with the Brainiac, and I forget his name, and as we all know, you and I do not do our research for any research for the show.
Research gets in the way.
It gets in the way of a good opinion. But the Brainiac, who did Siri and then did Bixby, right? He's still with Samsung, assuming he actually stays. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, track record and all.
Right.
Even with him, I have my doubts about what Samsung can actually do. And again, that actually, some of that comes down back to the fact that they're not controlling the hardware and the software. They're not controlling the operating system. And Samsung has no track record whatsoever of developing an operating system that anyone's going to use.
Right. And okay, so here's the problem that I see with Bixby being a cross device or cross company service. And it's that Samsung will have to cater to the lowest common denominator because you need to make this actually work on everything. And it's a problem that Microsoft has dealt with Windows for years.
And Google.
And this is what Google's dealing with. And this is something that Apple doesn't have to deal with because they control the whole package. Therefore, they have an advantage, and we'll see if that plays out long-term, in this space because they don't have to make compromises to accommodate other companies' devices.
Right. Yeah, if anything, that could definitely sabotage Samsung's Bixby dreams, whatever. But to recap, Samsung's entire premise of trying to beat Apple, right? We have a dream to overcome Apple. Whatever, dude, you're not going to do it. Whatever unnamed random who gives a crap Samsung executive, it's not going to happen. But Bixby could be the closest thing that they've ever had. You know, Bixby could be the thing that proves me wrong. Could be. It's not today, but it could be.
well, if nothing else, if they create Samsung can really turn Bixby into a serious AI competitor, then that pushes Apple to make Siri that much better.
Yeah, well, and I mean, we're so out of time, but to that end, Apple needs to step it up with Siri for sure. Apple needs to, you know, Siri needs to get better, a lot better and a lot faster. And one last thing.
Okay, one last
thing. This Galaxy S8. Mm-hmm. Is it just me or is that just a weird looking ugly ass phone?
It's the dimensions of the phone. It just looks weird. Like every photo I've seen, I've wondered if someone screwed up the perspective. You know, like they stretched or shrunk the image, but didn't do it proportionally. But it's consistent. So no, that's just it has a weird shape to me.
So again, this is, you know, one of the things that we're told that Apple may be doing, and maybe Apple will, you know, magically get me to change my mind, or maybe just Apple will do it better. But the curved edges on the display put me off my milk, man. I don't like it. This is an ugly phone. Fingerprint sensor next to the camera is just stupid. Just stupid.
So, Brian, if you want to see what doing curved edges looks like when it's right, take the case off of your iPhone 7, because we do have curved edges. We just don't have edge-to-edge display to go along with it yet. And if you look at that curve on the edge of the iPhone 7, and it's on the 6 also, and 6S, it's done so it looks good. It blends with the body of the phone nicely, and it doesn't have that weird curvy wrapped look that Samsung's phones have. So my guess is, if you want to see what a curved display looks like on an iPhone, just look at what you have right now and then take Photoshop and make the display part a little bit bigger so it goes edge to edge, and there you go.
Yeah, all right, whatever.
You can sit there and make I just dropped my clutch sounds all you want, but I'm pretty sure I nailed it on the edges of the phone for the iPhone 8.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, well, that's okay, because when we see the iPhone 8 and everyone looks at it, they're going to go, all right, so Jeff was right.
And there are usually firsts for everything.
And I love how you have this mental block on me getting other things right.
Just because you've gotten all the other things wrong. I know. It's really rude of me.
I know. Totally rude of you.
Jeez. I'm such a jerk. In the meanwhile, this Galaxy S8 is just ugly. It's ugly. It's ugly. I don't like it.
Yeah.
I don't like it, Jeff. I don't like it. I don't like the whole thing. I don't like this law that the Congress has passed that Trump is most likely to sign. Right? Of course he will. And I don't like I don't like the corporatist crap that's happening right now in this country. I do not like surveillance capitalism. I don't like the Galaxy S8. I don't like that stupid fingerprint sensor next to the phone, next to the camera. That is just stupid. It's dumb. I mean, that's just such a bad idea. What the heck were they actually thinking?
So you don't like what Congress is doing. You don't like a lot of the policies of our current administration. You don't like what Samsung is doing with their new devices. What's your stance on green eggs and ham?
I try them. Yeah, I definitely try them.
Yeah, see, I'm glad you have an open mind.
All right, we went over. I'm really sorry about going over, but you know, we could probably go another half hour.
We could, except I'm about to hit this button. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And thanks for listening.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom. I think I changed keys. Recorded just for TMO, and that's all for this week.
See, I assumed the key change was something you were doing, building up to the bridge. But since it turns out you just accidentally changed keys, I'll say stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer. I don't like it.
I like Green Eggs and Ham.